Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Getting my dad to say I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves it.
Outrageous.
Bloody nonsense.
Welcome back to Getting My Dad to Say I Love You, the podcast where I chat to funny people, writers, actors, comedians, find out about their family so we can blame their parents for the reason they are the way they are, and most importantly, trying to get my dad to say I love you. Here's my dad, John Martin, with me as always for the intro and the outro. How you doing, Dad?
Oh, well, good to hear you.
We got Tiff Stevenson this week. You like Tiff?
Yeah, I've heard her at Edinburgh.
You've seen her, you've met her as well, we've had drinks with her.
Yeah, we went into that rather nice club in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
The one where comedians are allowed.
Yes,
they let me in for the night, I think.
You like going into clubs that have an exclusivity policy, don't you?
Yes.
So Tiff's coming up. What is there anything you've seen her on apart from live comedy, seen her on a telly?
I start watching all this daytime telly and you get lost with who's on it.
Yeah, that's true.
They all look the same. They almost go to the same hairdresser. I thought Janet Street Porter this morning she'd gone to a hairdresser and used a pudding basin on her hair.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she put it, what, she had a fringe?
It wasn't very subtle. Because actually she has quite nice hair and I thought she could have done a better job with it. But that's just my opinion.
Well, that's just your opinion. Well, if you're listening, Janet Street Porter, my dad likes your hair, but he thinks you can do better. And on that note, we're gonna find out why some people, other than me, have issues based on their parents. Back in a bit. How you doing, Tiff?
I'm good. I'm in my book nook.
You're in your book nook.
I'm in my book nook in North London, and it's been raining today. And so I got the cozy vibe on. Although, to be honest, I'm a bit annoyed that we've had no summer.
You've had no summer. I mean, if that's still, I like that's at the top of your list of things to be annoyed about in the last year and a bit.
It's yeah. Like, well, on
global
top of
pandemic,
everything else.
But yeah, I know, yes. And on top of everything else, it's you needed some sunshine after the last year. So Tiff, what I like to start with, we just get straight into this. We've had actually more chit chat than with anyone else. What I like to ask at the start is, have both your parents said to you, I love you?
Yes, they have actually. Recently, I think I say it more now than they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my dad in more recent years, I think since the pandemic, I say I love you, and he's been very mindful of like thanking me for doing things for him. I just took him to the dentist the other day and he said, I know I'm a pain. I said, you're not a pain. I said, these things happen. You get older, you know. You know, he had an abscess on his tooth. So
your dad
in,
is
in the midst of that.
Out of I've done a few guests on here at the moment, but your parents I know. I think I know almost as well as like Carl's, because your dad is always at your very fun show, Old Rope, helping run it. So, I mean, that's like out the gate. And what's your dad's Ron and your mum's called?
Lorraine.
Lorraine. And she's also there as well, which is very sweet support. But they're not together, but they still come and they're still kind of... That's
oh, no, they are together. They just they act like they're not.
Oh, that's so... Why did I think... That's hilarious.
Because they act... Sometimes they act outwardly hostile to each other in public, which is always fun to be party to. But they... They do. That's... They act like one time she came to Old Rope, she was like, oh, I can smell him before I see him.
Amazing.
So it means they'd have left the house at the same time. He's come into Old Rope. She's gone round the shops and they've got
Amazing.
Some nice bits in them going round the shops. And then that'll be, you know, so yeah, they're still, but that is.
Oh, it's so funny. I thought they were like one of those.
I mean,
like,
I'm going to write 5 minutes of stand up on that now. The great thing about your parents is they're not together, but they still both come to things.
That's so funny. I literally did, because they're always at different sides of the room. So I was like, yeah. Well, they can be in the same room together.
Yeah, they need that space, because otherwise they'll start nitpicking at each other. Genuinely, they'll start having a row. I don't know how you have a relationship where you're that constantly at each other. So I try not to, I've gone for the opposite of that in my own life. I'm like, I'm not going to do this. I can't.
Yes.
But you know, that's part of their codependency. I was gonna say is the thing, that's their relationship. It's always been a bit like that. They've always been a bit like, bah, 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 at each other.
That relates very hard with me. My mum and dad are together, but if I call them, all one of them will do will complain about the other one, and then there's times when there's two of them, and I think that's partly what I want to do. I don't know if this relates to you as well. I feel like a bit of a, like, the family therapist in some ways. I'm just like, they're just going, she makes a lot of good points, you're also making a lot of good points. I mean, it's almost like they need me to go, maybe like compromising's not a bad idea. Like, I'm the first person to come up with that. That's so funny. Your parents are a bit like, but they're still together, which is still like, yeah, I know what you mean. It's like a different way of being in love that I don't want, but it doesn't mean it's wrong. Doesn't mean it's wrong, but I really do my best to avoid that type of relationship with my wife. And you and Paul are very loving, and you're very close knit. And I would definitely know walking in a room that you guys are still together. Unlike Ron and Lorraine. So funny. If they're listening, I apologize, guys. You're both lovely people, but I misread the body language. But then that then makes me love them even more, because they remind me of my parents.
Yeah.
So they both said it before. So they're obviously very supportive, because they come and watch you do your stand up and stuff. And like I said before, my dad doesn't. He's not comfortable saying the words, but he does show it in other ways by being supportive. So I'm not complaining. I'm not one of those people going, like, I know he does, but I find it fascinating. He can't do it.
I think
Ron and my dad, I don't know if they've met. I think they're kind of similar vibe guys. And
I think my dad would struggle with sorry. I think the love part is easier. I think saying sorry for something is something that he would inherently. And so I think things that he might have regretted over the years, he's tried to make up with, exactly what you're saying there, with his behavior and our relationship and stuff. Because our relationship didn't start, it's just he was always working. He was like really working and busy when I was young, and out at the pub, and like he had his band for years. So this is my dad
apart from the music. There's no music, but yeah, out all day, you know, working out all night on the piss or whatever.
Yeah. And so all through my like teens and 20s, so really my relationship with my dad came in my 30s, really. And for me, from stand-up comedy, that's where our connection like then became this thing, because he loves that world and he's intrigued by that world and its performance, and it, you know, so that actually stand-up has been a big thing that has like probably enhanced my relationship with my dad, to the point that my mum goes, oh, you guys are so close now, what about me? It was always me, and now, you know. So then the two of them were out about that, so that's good.
That's very funny. But the performing side, I see that's an interesting way of like bringing you guys together. But then the thing that I popped into my head was you're very hard. I mean, I said this to everyone, because I think everyone who's successful and everyone I'm interviewing on this, I deem very successful. I do think you have to be extremely hardworking in comedy. And so your dad was always working all day and maybe out at night. So did he tell you to work hard? Because I think you have an amazing work ethic. You're always working on stuff. You've got loads of projects going on. I really admire you in that way. Do you think your dad, did he tell you work, or did you, because I think I always just watched my dad working all the time. And I thought probably below some layers, to get his attention, I needed to work hard.
I don't think he outwardly said it. Like sometimes my dad will say things that I am, stunned is probably the wrong word, but sometimes, no, like that sounds like it's going to be bad, but like I'm stunned by the clarity and depth of something he'll say to me about something that we've not spoken about before. And I'll be like, I remember one year. So, yeah, so it's never really about working hard. He always like, he's, my dad's super smart and very mathematically gifted and stuff as well, which came into play with his job and stuff.
What did he do?
Well, he was, when I was a kid, he was the manager of Wembley Stadium.
Yes, he's told me that. And he's seen so many bands and stuff by just being there, right?
Yeah, yeah. So but that was part of my childhood. It's a really interesting thing because I, there's always like talk about class and stuff that comes up every now and again. And I'm someone who goes, well, I'm working class. I went to a comp. My mum was a cleaner when I was a teenager. When my dad lost his job, we were just all living off my mum's wage. My mum and dad, you know, like there were points in my early kind of like, guess my early years where mum and I went through the system a bit because she left dad a couple of times, like they split up a couple of times. So we went to, you know, going to the DSS and, you know, living in a like, you know, a B&B room or whatever in a, you know. So it's a really interesting thing. And then I remember someone like coming and attacking me on Twitter going, basically this posh, you know, C-U-N-T, because her dad worked at Wembley and she's full of shit. And I was like, oh. So my dad comes from like, I have this really weird dichotomy because my dad comes from like quite rich Scottish Presbyterians, but it wasn't like we ever got any of that money. And my mum comes from Romany Gypsies. So I'm like half, there's rich Scottish clergy on one side and the other half is like is gypsy. So, and also, yeah, like, there's this weird thing at the moment where these BBC guidelines have come out to like establish working class, like who's working
class. The UK,
class.
I mean, I'm not there at the moment. And the one thing I always think about the UK that is so class obsessed and the fact there's guidelines to establish your class feels insane.
Do you know what they
me,
need to do? It needs to not be about class and it needs to be like hire some people out of outside of Oxbridge. Like literally, it's as easy as that. If you stop going, we'll get everyone from Eton and Harrow and we'll get like, you know, we'll get everyone from Oxford or Cambridge, you know, then you're starting somewhere, you know. Like, yeah. Or even Durham, like, you know.
It's funny when the guidelines apply to the diverse side and you're like, isn't it making it harder for, why can't it, the whole point is everyone and anyone should be able to, rather than why are you putting rules to like how diverse someone is?
And technically I would fit into that because it's like, oh, we're one of your parents in this manual labour job. Like, and manual labour was like, if your dad was like, I think it was like, road sweeper, lorry driver, or your mum was a cleaner or what, you know, like, so it's such a weird, and also there's a very, my parents I describe as like charismatic lunatics.
Right. I get that. I relate to that massively. Yeah.
They're charismatic. Like if they come in a room, you're going to hang out with Ron and Lorraine.
You are.
And
you're
going to enjoy
are.
It, right?
They you are know? Very, you just have that aura. You're like, oh, you're going to be fun. You know, like both of them. I just like, they're just always up for they're sociable animals, I would say.
Yeah. And charismatic lunatics because they are mad and I'm mad. Like, but there's, yeah, you in a room, you're like, yes, we want to, of course we want to chat to them. So my dad's job when I was, I think he was at IBM for a little while as well. But then when he was sort of still, that's, he was at IBM and he sort of had the band going. And I remember the band used to rehearse in the house.
Is that IBM in Chiswick? Is that IBM in Chiswick? I always sort of signed for it near there. Brentford, Chiswick.
Yeah.
The old Brentford. Mate, that drive. Driven past there many times. Yeah. Yeah. So he did that and then he was, okay, right.
And then he was at Wembley. So when I was a kid, he was box office manager. So it was like, we're going back to when Harvey Goldsmith, before, like, because my dad was there, sort of did Live Aid. Pre when my dad first joined, I think Harvey Goldsmith used to be like a ticket tout outside and the.
Right.
Whether I get in trouble for
I don't know.
That.
I don't know who he is.
He's huge promoter, like a huge music promoter, like very successful, was part of Live Aid, is like, you know, I don't know whether I'll get up. We should check that afterwards, see if it's common knowledge. If it is, then we're fine. But okay. Yeah, so he was there. So that meant that when I was a kid, like it took a lot to kind of impress me. in terms of celebrity and stuff, because they would always, I met like John Moss and he gave me a signed Culture Club album, and I sat on Annie Lennox's lap while she was doing her makeup to go on stage with the Eurythmics. So I'd always have this like AAA, I was probably just this precocious, annoying kid knocking around. But also half the time I'd be like, where's the pencils? I want to do some colouring. So I don't really give a shit. And I didn't really appreciate stuff like Wham! The Final. Like, we, you know, watched that in the, I think that was the stadium actually. And I was like in a box with Tony Hadley and one of the Kemp brothers from Spandau Ballet. Then another time, like with Jerry Hall watching Tina Turner.
And how old are you then? You're like, it's like five, I'm like, years old.
He was definitely, by the time my grandma, so my grandma died when I was 11. So it was before I went, and dad was already, I think he was there till I was about 9 or 10. Right.
So you were just, just by osmosis, you would have been wanting to get into, probably you were so, you weren't fazed by these people, but that must have made a thing in your brain go, I want to perform. Because your dad was around that world and he obviously loved that world. So deep down in you.
And my aunt as well was an actress, but I didn't really understand or know, because I think at that point in her career, I just remember seeing this woman with like huge sunglasses and a tiny dog. She had a shih tzu.
That's every celeb, mate. Early doors. I walk past 50 of them a day in Los Angeles. Massive glasses, tiny dog.
And I think she died when I was about 7 or 8. So I remember it was before my grandma. So she was kind of in show. I think she was in the business, but I think because she was in that business, I think my dad and maybe my grandma, maybe that side of the family, were a bit like, you know, this is hard and it's not as glamorous as it looks from the outside. And it's an environment that can sometimes not be filled with the best people. And, you know, but she was absolutely like the most stunning kind of Audrey Hepburn looking woman. Mm-hmm. So she was very classically, I don't look anything like her. And she was in sort of.
I think you look lovely. Just so for the
thanks,
for the listeners,
in
a very non, just a very neutral. You look lovely. just saying it in a very pleasant way. No other intentions.
But she was in stuff like The Avengers, and she was in Adventures of Robin Hood, and she was like friends with Shirley Eaton, who was one of the early Bond girls, and Edmund Purdom, and she was in like the Saint, stuff like that, right? So she'd been...
And she's on your dad's side or your mum's side?
She's my dad's sister.
So your dad's side has more of the entertainery side, the show.
My mum's side has a real kind of creative side as well, but it's like kind of more of an artsy vibe. And in fact, my mum's first job was, she used to do continuity at Rank Studios, Studios, right? So they were both actually sort of in that area. That was her. I've got something very interesting to tell you about that, actually. I'll come on to that.
Okay, right. Denim Studios.
Put a pin in Denim Studios. So my aunt, I've never met any of the people who sort of work with my aunt through acting or any of those. She went to RADA as well. So she, you know, I think like...
Did you want to go
away from home?
Did you want to go to RADA? Because I know there's a big because Hans did. You know, she went to drama school, but RADA's expensive, right?
Expensive. I think I don't know if there's any. What's the word I'm looking for? Any. You get it subsidized?
Scholarship.
Scholarship. I don't know if there's scholarships. My aunt either left Scotland or ran away from Scotland to go there. And so I had a thing of like, I wanted to, when I was a teenager, I sort of begged my parents to go to Italia Conti or Sylvia Young. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to send me to, well, there was, I think at the time I was asking, either my dad was redundant, didn't have a job, because then he went to work for a construction firm. So it could have been in that time when we were living off my mum's money. So
back of your mind, you're like, that's going to tick a box for the working class thing with the BBC in 35 years' time. Get a manual labour job, Ron. This is going to sort me out. In 20 years' time, I'll be laughing.
So it was, yeah. So I think it was either that I couldn't afford, and also that there was a concern over how much of the other education. You're really bright, you know. My mum still occasionally goes, when are you going to do stuff with your brain? I was like, I mean, that's exactly what I do. I make money from words that I create in my head, sentences that I construct.
That's interesting, though. This is another pin here. That's an interesting thing that your mum said. So do you think your mum, like, she says it jokingly. She's obviously very proud of you and what you do, but do you think there's a bit of her that's like, because when I started this, my dad was very supportive because he hated his job. But very selflessly, you know, did it and sent us to school and all that. My mum, I think, was like, and she's working class, so she's just like, why are you not doing a sensible job that earns you loads of money? And then when I started earning money, she was like, not that she's like in a bad way, I think she was like, okay, fine, this kind of makes sense now. But do you think your mum, there's a bit of her, like, when you were starting then, you're kind of going into that, does she want you to just get in a, don't take these risks, go for the sensible option?
Yes. So she's gone through every phase. It's mad. So early doors, when I was about 18, I turned up at some studios for a casting because I was with a sort of kids agent for a little while. When I was like 16 or 17, I joined this sort of like acting class that had an agency attached. And Brian Adams was there and he asked me out.
Yes.
Right. And I didn't know. Yes. I didn't know it was Brian Adams. I had no idea. So I was like... So I turn up for this casting. The woman.
How old's Brian Adams at this point?
I mean, he's got to be. Is he in his 60s now? Late 50s? Let's look it up.
I mean, he wouldn't be the first musician to ask someone out who's dangerously too young. Sadly, that is.
He's 61. So, he's got, you know, he's got a fair old chunk on me. Not quite 20 years.
Wow. Okay.
A little bit less than, but you know, so I would have been, I mean, maybe if I was 18, he would have been like 35, 30.
Yeah.
Right? No.
Do you know, it's one of those things where you, when you hear stuff like that, you're like, oh yeah, cool. And then as soon as I hit 35, which is my age now, actually, the idea of dating an 18-year-old is insane to me. They look so young, 18-year-olds. I'm like, all right, man, well, whatever. It's legal. If your first thing is it's legal, then that's not a great first, you know, it's legal, street legal. Okay. Yeah, anyway. So if they've got a kids agent, they're too young for me. That's what I'm going to say that right now. If a girl has a kids agent, even if she's 18, it's get when they've got an adult agent, at least. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
That's all right. So basically I turn up and the woman who's running it, Tina, I think she's American. Right. I just remember it being like cool beans, you know. She was like this really. She like ran the acting classes.
That is what an American says. They do say cool beans. No British person said cool beans back then. Probably not even now. Yeah. Unironically,
so,
yeah.
So she got me in for the casting, and then we were waiting. So I was there with my friend. I think I was there with my friend Tara, and we're waiting in. There's like a bar area. What I didn't realize is there's a bunch of it's a place in like Ladbroke Grove. There's a bunch of A&R companies like in the same place that the casting is being held. So my friend Tara goes to the bar to get me a drink. She's like, Tiff, what do you want? And then this like small man who looked quite greasy. I didn't know like who he seemed nice, but he was like, Tiffany, like breakfast at Tiffany. And he started like kind of doing this kind of and then he
that
was like,
gross. That's gross. He did
the breakfast at Tiffany. And he's like, is that your name? And then he was like, would you like to come to dinner with me? I'd like to take you out for lunch, not breakfast. Would you give me your number? Like, it might have even been pages at the time or whatever, but like Tiffany. And my friend Tara's like, ah, like, and then Tina comes out and she takes me in and she's like, who is that small man just being like trying it on with you? And I was like, I don't know. It's just like asking me out. I go in, I do the casting. I don't get the job. And then later on, that day or the next day on the radio. It's like, Bryan Adams is in town. And then I get a phone call from the woman, Tina, the American lady, going, oh, my God, that guy we were fucking rude to was Bryan Adams.
That's excellent.
That was like,
I love it, like, mate. You monked off Bryan Adams. That's great.
And then my mum, but this is where I say my mum's gone through phases. I tell my mum what's happened. She's like, you should have gone out with him just once. He probably would have bought you a Porsche or something.
Amazing. Amazing. Wow, that's so good. Doesn't matter what, yeah, just as long as you get a Porsche out of it, everything's fine. Jesus.
So that was 20 plus odd years ago, mum, or the versions of my mum. So one of the things we go log ahead with, and I wrote an article about this and then I never published it, but I think it's a longer thing, possibly for a book, because I find the generations of feminism fascinating. So one of the things when I was saying about my mum working at Denham Studios, fairly recently, I'm going to say about 3 years ago. Can I tell you this story? Is that all right?
Or do you Mate, yeah, go for right, it. No, okay. I know. So, you've come back to the pin. We've put the pin in Denham Studios.
I'll always get back to the pin.
Yeah, so, mate, I'm happy.
We're at a funeral. My cousin Jane, so I say she's my cousin, is my mum's cousin's daughter. So my mum and Cynthia, they're cousins, and her daughter is Jane. And Jane is like, she does all these women's networks. She's like quite a hardcore feminist. She's really super smart. She comes to see my shows, like, in fact, she's seen my shows in America and the UK and stuff. She's awesome, right? So my mum and Cynthia lived together for a little bit when they were kids, because my mum stayed with Cynthia and Barry. So we're at a funeral, and it's, so I guess it must be around 2018 or tail end of 2017,
right?
Because a Me Too discussion is happening.
Okay.
And so Jane and I are talking about like equal pay and sexism in the workplace and what constitutes harassment and a feeling of obligation to go along with things that people suggest because they're work. At which point, like, my mum and her cousin are like, she stopped going on about, like, it was literally like this. She stopped going on about it. When we worked at Denham, you go in the dark room, you got felt up. You just dealt with it.
Wow.
And it was like, we didn't go on about it, did we? Like, it was a bit like that. So,
wow. That's, that's not an uncommon reaction from, is it like, do you reckon, I mean, we've gone into a whole other world here, but do you reckon that's, and I might be wrong, is that because they're like, we went through that,
yes,
and we're fine? I think yes. That's a lot of people's perception of life, isn't it? Like, well, I did that and I was fine.
I think it was, you're complaining that you had it hard, we had it harder. There's a bit of that. I also think as well, is that, and I think this about lots of things, because I'll have debates with my mum. Like, I remember when Wayne Rooney had an affair, right? And my mum showed me the paper and she pointed at the girl that he had the affair with. And she was like, that girl knew he was married when she started shagging him. And I was like, Wayne Rooney knew he was married. Why is this? So that's how we come at it. I was like, we're coming at it from two different, and I think it's generations of feminism. And I think I try to be kind, because also I have to remember when discussions happen around women's safety and getting home at night and doing all of this, like, the messages that my mum had and the level of fear and protection she had for me was crazy high, because she's dealing with how the world is, not how she wishes the world would be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is very scary. So I think within that, me and my cousin end up saying, oh, we're really sorry. You shouldn't have had to put up with that. That's really fucking shit. And guess what? I think at the top, I think the frustration comes from, because at the time they couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
So they had no choice but to get on with it. So it's a slight change of perception when they say we just got on with it. What they sort of mean is we didn't have any recourse to deal with it. So we could go and complain and we'd just be told to find another job.
Mm.
So we had to accept it societally, and it's quite hard.
Yeah.
I do think that, like, I think now when I've got friends who are like, would call themselves the elder gays. And when they see the young gays, and they toss around words that they were like, listen, that was when we were young, we just didn't say that word. Like, and now you want to reclaim it. We get it. But that was like abuse for us. And also we marched and we did this fight and we did this. So you can kind of see, so generationally, I feel like that was kind of a similar situation to them. Is like, they're like, we didn't complain about it, but also that they couldn't. And so what you hope is that you inch the progress forward again and again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even with my mum, so, you know, that kind of going, don't go through the park at night. And then we have these conversations around victim blaming. And I say to mum, you know, like, these are victim blaming things. But then this is the same mum who, when I was like, I think I was like 14, maybe, or 13, the first time that she taught me to carry a hairspray in my handbag and a tail comb, because you're allowed to use that as a weapon. A tail comb with a little pin at the end. So if you needed
to. Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and my, one of my earliest memories is being on a train with my mum, and I must have been about 6 or 7. And I you just sort of forget how the adrenaline must work for your parents and how all of this happens. We're on the train and there's a guy sat opposite us. And every time I look at him, he starts rubbing his dick. But I don't know what that means at that age.
Right.
And then eventually I say, Mummy, that man, every time I look at that man, he touches himself. And like, so then my mum like moves us, and then we get off the train the next day. It happens really quickly. Like, we sort of, she gets up and she fucking slaps him, and then we're off the train. And then we're on a cold train platform. And I just, I can only imagine like what's coursing through her body in that moment. You know, as a woman then at her age, she had me when she was 34, you know, so she's in her early, she would have been the same age as me, right? In this kind of state of like violent fucking, you know, this can just happen. I'm with my child and a man is doing this on the train, like, and how unsafe that feels.
Yeah.
And how they've lived in that world. So the same as your mum, the same as Hannah's mum, you know, they've grown up in this world where they didn't really have as much of a voice.
Yeah,
even so though that, there were waves of feminism, you know, how much power they actually had.
That's really fascinating. That and that probably trips down into like when you're like, I want to be an actor and do stuff. She's probably thinking, is that like safety thing? She's like, well, this is not like, I mean, there is obviously dangers, but she's more like career wise, that's an unsafe route to choose. So she, yeah. So did you feel like that kind of trend?
Well,
like,
even within the go out of him once, he would have bought you a Porsche. That comes from the same place, right?
Yeah, it does.
It comes
yeah.
from a fear of, I need my daughter to be safe, because every mother that has a daughter is going, what if she doesn't come home tonight, you know? Mm-hmm. And that is, that's a real fear. It's a real, so that, you should have got out of him once, he would have bought you a Porsche, is you'll be okay. Like, it's, you'll be okay if you have money.
Yeah,
and if you're with
is,
a man who has money, or you get married, you're going to be safe. And I don't want you to not be safe. And I don't want society to not care about you. And so for society to care about you, she thinks that means you've got to be married, you've got to have kids, you've got to have security, you've got to have money. And all of my choices in life have been running away from that. So I can understand how it's quite hard for my mum, that she's stressed and she's worried, because, you know, it's the same thought that is going through when I'm a teenager going out. It's like, I want her to be safe.
Why do you think you've run away? Like, as in taken the riskier, why do you think that is? Like, is it just because you were just like enamored with the lifestyle when you were a kid? Or do you think there's a little bit of, I mean, different because I'm a guy, obviously, but I've always, the idea of doing the safe route has always made me sad. I don't know, like, it's made me feel like anxious about it. I much rather do the, just the idea of a 9 to 5 or whatever. And I know why. It's because my dad used to do that and hated his job and just said, whatever you do, don't do this. It's the worst. So I know that's why I felt like doing the thing I love and taking the risks with it. But do you think, yeah, what do you think pushed you away from the safe options?
Adrenaline junkie, a sponge for new experiences. A few things, really. I think one is control, you know, like at a young age, because my parents would row with each other, you know, they'd argue, and you're the person in the middle trying to, you know,
sitting on the steps overhearing it.
Overhearing it, or getting in the middle of it going, you know, like trying to distract from it, you know, trying to diffuse it in whatever way you can, whether it's, so when I was young, I was a huge bookworm. I mean, I still am, I'm in the book nook, but I was obsessed, and I liked the idea that I could escape by going into these worlds that were created. And it felt like I wasn't. So I would use that as a route of escapism. And I think the performance side of it, I think, again, control. I think like a lot of us get into stand-up. It's very, very funny. We get into stand-up because we don't want to work for someone else. So it was acting first and that performance side of things, which obviously I still do. And part of that, I think, comes from I get to try on lives. I don't know whether it's about not really
be
knowing
someone
yourself.
Else.
But yeah, you get to try on all these different lives and go, oh, what would it have been like if I'd have been this? Or and the travel and the adventure of it. And stand-up is...
But you have very little control with the acting because you're so reliant
on
a person
people giving you
giving
job.
You
yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I would say to, I would think for like all actors that, and a lot of the ones who are like huge or who are good, that like diversifying is such a huge thing because there's such a lack of control. And so that's when you find even like actors that are huge but could start producing as well and getting into finding scripts and putting projects together because at least then you have some say over where it goes. So I think there was a bit of that. I think there was a bit of like, I had ideas, I had things I wanted to say. I think I'm quite empathetic as a person. I think that leans into sort of acting. I'm quite affected by, you know, the moods of people around me and stuff, and working with energy. That's what stand-up is. It's in a room taking that energy and manipulating it and getting your ideas. Being heard, I think, is one of the big things of wanting to be heard.
I never quite thought until you said it, and that really rung very true to me, was that you made me go back to my childhood and think of sitting on stairs. Last time I said it, it was like parents arguing, and there is like such a powerlessness to it because all you want is them to get on and not do that. But you're little, and they don't, you know, they whatever they obviously love it, they like you, but you're not. They're like, you don't know, you're like a 7 year old, but you just don't. You want them to not. So I never quite realized there was a correlation there. So you said that, which is like, of course you get up there, stand up. I'm on control. I'm making everyone have a good time. Well, most people, if it's going well, a couple of people might be hating it. But you're trying. That's really interesting. Yeah, that's very fascinating. I never thought of that till you said that.
Well, you can be the person that makes everything all right, and that is as a comic. Everyone's laughing. Everything's all right. It's diffused. You've diffused whatever tension there is. You've broken it. You sometimes as comics we create it and then we break it, but it's always, you know, kind of there. So, and I had a very early rule with my stepson that Paul and I would never argue in front of him, to the point that once, this is very funny, once we
where did you go for your argument?
We went to the kitchen and I switched on the organic bean grinder, coffee bean grinder.
Like the room was bugged. So you got to go to the bathroom, turn the shower on. Oh, that's funny.
Because I know how much it affects you, you know, and my parents would probably think she's being unfair with that, but it's true. It really does. It really does. Like parents who are like loud and screamy at each other, it does have a huge effect on the kids. So
that's funny. He thinks if you and Paul get into a bit of a weird moment at some point, he'll be like fuck it, I'm making a lot of beans at the moment, aren't they? So they're grinding like 3 hours of bean grinding a day. That's fucking Starbucks in our house at the moment. I think that's good. I like that rule. We don't have a kid yet, hopefully, maybe, who knows, but if we do, I agree. I do think the arguing is a thing that it's very normalized, and it's whatever, people do what they want to do. But you're right, it does live with
really
you.
It's really stressful for kids because it's the people that you love, and you know, a huge adult person screaming at another huge adult person, and you don't want either of them to be hurt because they're your world and they're your protectors.
Especially when that person spends a lot of their time being like, oh, how's it going? I'm very friendly. And then that switch, it's like the biggest change. You're like, why are they a scary monster now? It's kind of a weird, just, you don't even need to know what people are saying, but that emotional switch is huge, isn't it, when you're little?
Yes, and reading those cues and everything else, again, they're for acting. They're all the kind of things of the sort of little tricks of learning how people, you know, just watch that, all that filtering in as a child. You're like, oh, you know. And listen, your parents are complicated people, and it's a long journey. I think it took me to my late 20s to realise that your parents are there as much to teach you what not to do as they are to teach you what to do.
By their actions. But as in, like, you look at what they do and want to do something different?
Yeah, like don't,
I agree.
Don't expect them to have all the answers. Don't expect them to always be right, because they're human and they're people, and you have to acknowledge and accept them for that and kind of go, okay, well, these are the lessons they're teaching me that are good ones, and these are they're teaching me that I'm going to do the opposite of that. There is, you know, that's a good way to think about your relationship with your parents. So it's, you know, having respect for them because they're your parents, but also knowing that they're not always right. Also knowing that you're not always right, and that generationally, you know, stuff changes, and therefore that it influences everything about them. So it influences my mum's ideas around feminism. And then she, you know, she's like quite positive in lots of ways about it now, but also at the same time, you know, she's of her era.
I think that's interesting when you get older and you talk to, it reminds me a bit of school in a weird way. I remember when we were at my school, and this might just be a posh school thing, but till we were like 16, you're treated as like a kid. And then we're 16 to 18. You almost talk to them like you're semi on the same level. And I always think that's an interesting thing as you get older when you talk. Well, now it's weird with parents, because I feel like talk to them on the same level. Now I talk to them like they're the kids. And I'm sure that relates to them anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you know, especially with COVID, like dads, like just don't just fucking go out on the piss and lick lampposts and all the stuff you normally do. But them finding it hard, that's a huge change for them. They're like, I just wiped poo out of your bum for like 5 years. That's still how I kind of perceive you. So you don't, they're like, you don't know. That's an interesting thing with parents. And,
I like that you were still shitting yourself at 5 years old.
Oh, yeah. That's
bit of a tell there.
Sorry, I mean, five months. I was pretty much potty trained by 6 months. I'm so good at shitting. Just want to put that on my Edinburgh poster. Good at shitting, Chris Martin.
Come here, son.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We were talking about, so your parents were, they let you kind of, they let you get into the world and do stuff. Your mum was a bit reticent at the start. And then did you have like, when you, like I said, when I started earning money, my mum was like, oh, cool. Was there a point where your mum, you think, was way more on board with what you'd like when you got in the, I'm trying to think of stuff I know you did. When you got in the office, there's a kind of a huge thing. And then
when I got the office, that was not really because it was an unknown quantity at the time, even though I thought it was very funny. And actually I auditioned for a bigger part, didn't get it. And then my agent went, darling, my agent at the time, who used to talk like this?
One of those Janet, old schools.
No, Janet, she was, I think she's retired now. But she said, listen, darling, you just keep taking these small parts. You're just going to be a small-time actress. So, you know, it's up to you.
Yeah.
And I went, well, I think it's really funny. So I want to do the show. I'd like to be part of it because I think the show's funny. And so basically, I think it was, I auditioned for one and then they just came back and said, does she want to do this? It wasn't even like I had to do another audition. And then it ended up like making me like stupid money and royalty.
I know. Yeah, we chatted about that on the other podcast.
So my mum, not so much with that, but maybe because I think, when a check turned up for that, where she was like, but I think she now she's like, oh no, it's good. She's always like, just make sure you protect yourself and people don't take your ideas, and that, you know, they're very, obviously they're my parents. They're like, you should be on this. You should be doing that. How come they're doing that? And you're not doing this. And then I have to sort of go, I try not to do that. So I get that you want to do it for me and that's cool, but I can't engage in that because otherwise I'll go insane.
Yeah, you're going loopy. Yeah, that's I was speaking to Roisin about this, and actually her mum is much more hands off and like, oh, cool, like, that's cool, but whatever. But when, I wonder if, do you feel when you've got them going, you should, like, is that, do you feel like that's like extra pressure, right? Because it's nice to have that support, but then on the flip, and they don't mean it to be that, but that is a, because it's kind of a high pressure thing anyway, because we get 100 rejections, even if you don't know we're getting them, in what we're doing to get those big wins. Yeah, do you feel like, that's
yes,
because
it's
sometimes.
A reflection. We're a reflection on them, and like that's a narcissistic parental thing to do. And everyone's parents have a little bit of that. I say everyone's, a huge percentage, like, of people that I know have parents who have that narcissistic. You are a reflection. You're my child. I want you to be doing the best because it is a reflection on me. But they also want it for me, and so then I have to explain that, like, it's not. I get it because it's born from a desire. Like, we just think you're the best. We think you're the best. And how come that person, like, they can't touch you? I've seen them. I know. Like, you know, so there's like a bit of that. Like, obviously, because they, you know, you're their child and they think, you know, and it's not just us. It's your dad's mate as well. Your dad's mate thinks it. So
I love it when they bring up their other mate.
Well, your dad's mate Jim, because like Jim would come to Old Rope and he's watched me loads. So, you know, they know what I can do. So they're like, if it was up to me, it'd be everything, you know. So I have to try and, you know.
Wouldn't it be funny if like our parents were just like the BBC commissioner for a week and just like, just giving us so many things we're not in any way equipped for, like,
oh well, no, like, my mum's like, well, just ring up and tell him you want to do QI, and I'm like, it doesn't work like that, mum. It
doesn't. Have you tried to get on that show? Yeah, you don't just send them a letter. You have to like audition and impress the right person.
It's one of the things that happen relentlessly on, and if there are people on social media who listen to this that do this, you need to know that it's not like, a lot of the time you see people tweet mad shit like, well, they probably asked loads of, you know, it used to happen a lot with female comics. They probably asked loads of female comics and they turned it down or they were busy. And you go, no, they didn't. No, that's not what's happened. They've not, if someone's knowed something, 9 times out of 10, they'll go, oh, I just said no to that because it's not for me. Mm-hmm. So if you're not seeing a person on a show, for example, Taskmaster, and I am part of Taskmaster speculation season every year. Like, right. It'll come up, you know, but a lot of people will be like, oh, I think she probably turned that down. And I was like, no, I haven't turned it down. Yeah. I haven't been asked to do it. Like,
yeah, well, that's,
if I get asked to do it, then that's a different story, you know, but it's a sort of, it's a sort of, people assume that the business works a certain way and it just doesn't work that way. And so my parents quite naively think, well, we think you're brilliant. So everyone else who's thinking you're brilliant should, you know, and also a lot of the time
it comes from such a sweet place.
And a lot of the time they'll go by what the audience is responding to as well. And also we know that sometimes it's not just about the audience. Sometimes it's about a series of people who make decisions in television that it's based on a range of things at any given time. And it ebbs and flows. That's the other thing. No one has this path to success that's like a rocket ship. No. Very few people, maybe like Jack Whitehall and a couple of other people, but everyone else has these sort of waves, you know? And
of course,
the trajectory is generally upwards, but, you know, at any given time, it's about whose eye is on you and someone, you know, sometimes something will come out the blue and you'll go, oh yeah, I'll do that. I'd love to do that. That'll be really fun. And a job will come in.
When you get a job, that comes in that you're really excited for, that I'm trying to think of, like, do you call your parents straight away? Like, as in, me and Hans had something we're starting soon, we're not gonna talk about, but like,
yeah.
And I was like, when is the earliest I can tell my mum and dad, but not even like, it's not even, I don't think it's like they're going to be, it's just to sort of show that I'm like not insane, that I'm like I'm in America, but like it's, I'm not here just living on a street corner.
Bumming around. Right. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not just getting stoned, man, like everyone else. I'm like here, like doing stuff. And so, and I'd love to actually be at a point where I don't even, you kind of, well, you want to have enough stuff happen that you're like, oh, sorry, I forgot to tell you about that.
Trying to explain to them is quite difficult because, like, I tried to explain to them about Avenue 5. Like, so I'm like, Armando Iannucci. Yeah. And my mum's like,
he's not mum famous. That's the problem. I've had this.
Yes, he's not mum nip. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, like Russell Howard is, for example, is mum nip. But so I sort of try and explain, and then they go, oh, right, now I get it. And so you sort of explain to them a little bit and then they get it. But like, I'm doing a film, and we were talking before we started the recording. So I'm going to Serbia to shoot a film. And then my dad was like, oh, so like, what's, I'm a bit worried. Like, do you know anyone else that's going? And I was like, no, it's a film. It's a film, Dad. And then like, but how,
I've seen Serbia had a war 25 years ago, and I don't want you to go there in case you get in a war. That's so sweet.
So like, I was sort of going, yes, it's an American production and it's, you know, they're shooting like, you know, so you end up just kind of like going through those sort of beats and sort of trying to explain it to them. And then sometimes it's a quantifiable thing that they can go, oh, we know what that is. So if it's like Mock the Week or House of Games, they go, oh, I know that. And I can tune into that at tea time and that makes sense to me. And I can get my head right that and that, that sort of, but sometimes they're like, I don't understand. What do you mean you're doing stand up here, or you're writing? What are you writing? What do you mean you're writing on? Are you in it? Are you, you know, that they get.
Would you love to get to a point where you like, because you tell them and you want them to be happy. Would you like to get to a point where you're like, I'll tell them because my parents want to tell them, but also like, it's okay. I don't know, like almost like it's, I don't know, just do it because you enjoy it, it's fun, and not worry too much about their reaction. Would you like to get to that point, or do you just want to keep, I mean, I don't think there's a right or a wrong answer to this. I think it's like,
I would. My mum called me a snob the other day because I wouldn't get a Mac from Marks and Spencer's. We'd gone out shopping.
Buy a Rain Mac or a MacBook Air.
No, like a Rain Mac. Like,
okay, good. Mac, I was going to say, if you're buying laptops from Marks and Spencer's, they're not a snob.
I'd seen one, like, I think I was going, like, there was a threefold. So it's like, I can go the Burberry and go, this is my forever Mac.
Yeah.
I can go Massimo Dutti or somewhere like, I'm trying to think of a mid-rangey, or like a Isabel Marant or something, like, where I could go, where it could go anywhere from like 250 quid up to like 600 quid. Or there's the Burberry end, which is obviously way more expensive, and you get one Mac and it lasts your entire life, and then it sits in the wardrobe and you get a bit afraid of wearing it, right? So that's the sort of range. And she went, Marks do them. And I was like, I don't want one from Marks. And she went, you're a snob. And she started having a go at me. And my dad was like, she's not a snob. She just knows what she wants. And she was like, oh, I earn a bit of money. This is what, you know, like.
I love that. She's like she works for Marks and Spencer's. Why does she even? That's hilarious.
She's really annoyed that I think I'm too good for Marks. And I think it's because when I was a kid, Marks was the posh place,
posh,
you know?
The posh place.
And it was, you know, and then obviously we have been through times where like there was no money for anything like that, you know? There was no, my mum couldn't be getting new things for herself because she's trying to, we're living off her cleaning wage, you know?
Does it, do you think you've they've affected how you view money and stuff? Like my dad's very cavalier with money. I'm not as cavalier with him, but like he's very much like, spend it, enjoy it. And my mum is very much the opposite. And I think I've landed in the middle there, which is like, you know, do nice stuff, but also like have money. Like don't just.
I think my dad is quite. Yeah, I think my dad's quite sort of smart. He likes a little bit of a. He likes to do the horses, and he likes to put something on the football. You know, he likes to have
your
a bet.
Of course, he does. I could tell that straight away.
From the bookies.
Yeah, I could see him bookies. Down there. Right.
How many little pens in my mum and dad's house? Do you reckon?
I bet he's got so many tiny pens. It's like fucking Argos warehouse.
So I think. But my dad, I think with when he does, he's like got a butt, he'll go, I'll do 30 quid this week or it won't. And I love gambling, so I definitely get that from him.
Oh, yeah, you do love gambling. I love fruit machines.
I've been on the online ones during lockdown.
Oh, mate, online fruit machines is, come on, mate.
No, but also I go, oh, like it might be like I'll do 10 or 20 quid once a week. Okay. And then I'll play. And then I normally, because I won't go chasing a loss down a rabbit hole. I mean, I won 250 quid on one a couple of months ago.
You always hear about the wins though, don't you? You always hear about the wins.
Oh no, but if I go in and have a look, I'm like, I'm about even on everything.
Okay.
So like I check, because you can do your balance and checks. And I'm not promoting gambling, but also we all do things, don't we, to sort of take ourselves away from thinking about who we are for 5 minutes.
I want, this is my dad's attitude to money. My dad, when I was a teenager, I was at university, and he told me about a mate of his who'd investing on a website where you give a man on the internet money and he plays poker, but very conservatively. But your money goes up 10%, 20%. And he goes, is that all right? And he goes, yeah, sorry. And I kind of Googled it, and no one said it was a scam. But he's like, yeah, this guy, I'm doing it. He's got loads of money off it. So I put £100 in. And then I looked on the website a week later. He's like, oh, you've now got £130. I'm like, this is fucking great. So I just put 500. This is at university when you've got like no money. I put 500 quid in. And literally a week later, like the thing that stopped updating the website. And I was like, oh, what's going on here? This isn't good. And then the guy eventually dropped a message going, guys, I'm going to be honest. I started gambling a little bit more aggressively than before. And all the money's gone. However, I'd guaranteed you a 50% return extra. Now, I promise I can get you at least 75%, 175% of your investment. And I went, nah, it's a scam, isn't it? after the imaginary figures on the screen from a random person, £100, after the £500. But my dad had told me to just do it.
To someone who just invested in crypto, and that is basically gambling. Well,
it is the same. I've done the same, and I don't understand it, Tiff.
I did. I need the male equivalent of Margot Robbie in the bath, just some dude telling me what's up while his balls float in imperial leather.
I say, that's what's a horrible image that is. I've been talking about this on stage, how I'm not good. I don't own a house and stuff, and it doesn't help that I have been taking financial advice from teenagers on TikTok. I fucking just some bloke called like Stock Daddy, who's like 18, is like, this is what you're gonna be doing, and I'm like, okay, young man with a phone who's confident.
So crypto, yeah, I did. I mean, I would say I think a bit differently about money than my parents, maybe. But then again, they own a house, so. But I also think a bit more about.
You like to treat yourself when you get. I like that.
I,
that's a nice
I like to
like
treat it? Myself. I do. I sometimes go, don't hold back. Brett Goldstein was like, that was a piece of advice you gave me, and I bought a piano. Because I had my convertible, and I was like, you know, not
life's
for like, I'll do it,
I'll do it later.
So there's, you know, there's a bit of that, a bit of like, when this happens, I will get myself.
To reward yourself, because, you know, there's, like I said, there's a lot of rejections. When you get those wins, you've got to give that little reward.
Just a little something, a little nice something. But I do think, I think about money and how I can make money work for me, and how, because I think we're the opposite of our parents in that they worked to live and we live to work a bit more. Like we enjoy what we do. And
that's
so
correct.
And so therefore I have experiences in my life that I'm lucky would normally, same as you, would normally cost you a lot of money to have those experiences. Like I've never been on a cruise before. And last weekend or the weekend before, I was on a cruise with Michelle Roux and John Turode from MasterChef, just hosting these panels, interviewing them about food. And
nice.
We went on as like VIPs, and I was like, oh, this is the way to do a cruise. Like to have an amazing suite, but I got to do that. I got paid to do that. And that was awesome. So by not having, those are the perks, by not having this kind of guaranteed financial security that people in a 9-to-5 have, it's harder to get mortgages. It's harder to do that. But actually you can come into like a chunk of money that you go, oh, okay, maybe we'll build something on that piece of land. Like, so that's, you know, and I'm with someone who's like good at doing stuff like that. So I, I think a bit more modern and a bit more differently about finances. Like, my mum and dad don't necessarily make their money work for them,
That's true.
So I was like, years ago, I was like, guys, why don't you buy a smaller house or a bungalow and use the other half to buy a flat and rent it out, and then that rental income is your pension. You know, my dad's got, they're on state pension and stuff as well. And I think my dad's got, but you know, just stuff like that where you're
it's
like.
It's a lot of effort though, isn't it?
It's a lot of effort. It's not going to happen. But, you know, just stuff like that to kind of go, like, you know, trying to be a bit, you know, look, and I'm not saying I'm an expert in any way, but trying to be able to try and make it work for you a bit and have, you know,
I saw an old billionaire on one of these TikToks. Went, never pay with a debit card. That's your money. Use the credit card and pay it off every month. Why would I spend my own money when I can spend somebody else's in case something goes wrong? And I was like, all right. Yeah. All right, old man.
Well, that is, the credit card does give you insurance, which you sort of forget, and actually booked flights at the beginning of the pandemic. I am still trying to get the money back out of them, but the recourse is you can go through your credit card company and they'll do it because it's underwritten. So
look at this podcast. It's gone from parents to just sound finance advice from two people who've watched a couple of videos on the internet.
But whereas my dad is still the cash guy. I'll pay it cash.
How much for cash?
How much for cash is still a conversation.
When I was a 14-year-old, I was like, I went to Boots to buy my sister a hairdryer for Christmas. Before I went, I think my dad, because I was having pocket money, I wasn't a chimney sweep at 14, so he gave me pocket money. And I think I said I was like £15. He goes, ask how much for cash. And I was like, all right. I'm in Boots, and I go, hi, how much for cash? And they were like, it's still £15. We're not fucking independent mechanics. We're not an independent mechanics. We don't write off VAT here. But that's such classic cash dad advice.
Classic cash dad. So he's cash man. He doesn't have credit cards. He doesn't like the idea of owing someone money.
But that's
a switch. That's a thought process, right? So there's a switch there that is, I don't know if you've ever read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but it's amazing. So it's this kid who has a friend, and his dad and his family are really rich, and he gives him financial advice. And then he's got his dad who isn't very good with money. And it's about, like, you know, like how he sifted out the rich dad's advice to enable to.
Wow.
But, you know, like that, it's correct. That's going, you are owing someone money. I see what you're saying. But also the other thing is that you have to build credit in order to be able to get credit. So, yeah. So just about being able to make...
This. I love you, me doing a spin-off podcast.
Let's do a money podcast, Chris. Money. Let's do a...
Comedians making
rich
money.
Rich comedian, poor comedian. Rich comedian.
Fucking hell. I'm worried I'm definitely the poor comedian.
I could be, you know, like, don't worry about that. We'll get on someone who's fucking fully... But, you know, just stuff like... Obviously, because we create our own things and stuff as well. It's just of having that financial, you know, we've got friends who set up a podcast studio, you know, like Adam and Dan, who set up there, have, you know, just doing stuff like going, oh, we create this, so we own this, and this can make us money ongoing. And trying to think about how you can work smart with money rather than work hard, you know.
I agree.
Because there's no jobs for life anymore. Like, my brother-in-law retired at like 50, I think. But I feel like that was like the last, and I can't imagine retiring.
No.
I'll just be doing this.
What are you going to do? Yeah. It's boring. It'd be fun for like, I think it'd be fun if all your best mates and you, like 10 to 15 to 20 people, just all were just fucking about and do it. But that's not going to happen. You're not going to have it.
Yeah.
It's boring. Well, so that kind of, yeah. Work, speaking of working hard and come around, let's come back to the parents to finish us off then. So your your parents have instilled. I love your parents. I hope. Would you reckon they'll listen to this?
They might do. Yeah, yeah. So,
well, if they're listening, do you want to? Here's what I like to get everyone to do. Do you want to say anything to them, like, about, you know, just, you've been very honest but also very nice. But anything you want to say, like, you know, Lorraine and Ron, if you're listening. thanks for parenting me or whatever.
Yeah, thanks for consciously uncoupling. I was trying to take the piss out of Gwyneth Paltrow. They're all right, aren't they?
They are all right. I like them.
They're
a lot.
All right. I like them.
And I once again apologise for thinking you guys were not together. But I have the same parents, so maybe that's...
They may or they may not. I don't know if downloading a pod and then they may have to do it when I'm there, but let's see. They may or they may not. But I don't think I've said anything that would be so horrific that I would be disowned.
No, they're very relaxed, your parents. I don't imagine them being... too. You've been very nice as well. So, and then the final thing I like to do is... I'm trying to get my dad to say I love you, because like I said, he does, but he's got all this toxic masculinity and the generational thing. And do you know anything you think would help him, maybe just any tips, any advice, how he can kind of get over the fear,
tap that and open himself up to that he's part of a cycle of life and this beautiful son that you have that, you know, goes appreciate forth that into the world from your hopes and your dreams and your aspirations. And there he is, a representation of that. And he's doing really well. So just tell him you love him.
Oh, just say so it. Nice. That was so nice.
Say he's a brilliant kid. He's a really brilliant kid. So tell him you love him. It's a bit like therapy now.
I know. You've been actually too effusive towards me. I'm very uncomfortable how nice that was.
Also, if I would say to your... I'm trying to get my parents to do some of the journaling and stuff like that that I sort of enter into, which is consciously in your days of thinking about, like, if it was today was your last day or tomorrow, what would you do? Mm. What would those things be? Would it be, and not like a bucket list, would it be like, because I always have a thing like, I want to swim in the ocean. I need to be in the ocean, or I want to watch the stars, or I want to see a sunset, and I want to hug everyone I love, and I want to tell everyone I love that I love them.
Oh, that's nice.
So that you never know, like, that you should say it often, say it so often that it's not a thing. And we would do that with my stepson as well, you know, and Paul's side of the family are very effusive in saying that, you know, say it often. And it kind of takes the strain off of it. I say it to my friends as well. I say it on the phone. I might have said it to you and Carl. Love you. Bye.
I know. It's nice. It's nice. It's not. I think if it was my dad's last dinner, he'd probably still go to the pub. But but he would be very generous and buy a lot of drinks for people, because he's like that. He's nice like that. But I agree. Well, I love you, Tiff. It's nice.
Love you, Chris.
Before you go, though, do you want to plug anything? You've got you do a podcast yourself. Please plug.
Tiny Revolutions, yes. I'm not sure when the third series of that is coming out, but news on that soon.
Okay.
So, but if you go onto my Twitter and follow on there, got details of my gigs, follow me for that, for all the info.
If you get a chance, please watch Tiff. She's excellent. I love her. You love her. Tiff, see you soon.
See you soon. He's doing really well. So just tell him you love him. Love him.
So, Dad, it's nice to hear someone be nice about your son, right?
Right. It's really good, yes.
What does that sound like, therapy? You've done therapy before, right?
A little, but not much.
You're not a fan of it, though, are you?
I think it's one of those overblown subjects myself.
Yes, okay.
Is
it not true that you have been known to fall asleep in therapy?
Yes.
So she's got a bit of therapy there, but I appreciate what she's saying.
Yeah, she did a bit of therapy there, yeah.
Yeah, good. But is it going to make you...
No, I mean, sometimes
say
I
it?
Found
it. Is it going to make you say it, or is it going to make you fall asleep?
What?
Is it going to make you say I love you, or is it going to make you fall asleep, what she just said?
She was very complimentary about your abilities, so that was good.
That's good. Very nice. I appreciate that. You're not going to say it, though, still?
What?
You're still not going to quite say it yet, are you?
Well, I've got to think about it.
God. But you're going to come back next week, right?
Oh, I'd love to come back next week, yes.
Now I feel like you're just, you're not saying it so that you get to hang out with me more. Like, you're worried if once you said it, then I'll never speak to you again.
No, I don't think that. I mean, I'm still thinking about it, you know. I've got to... It's quite an interesting challenge, this.
Well, Dad, tell everyone to come back next week.
Yeah, definitely come back, because this is quite interesting.
There we go. Good. Thank you.
You meet these interesting comedian people on here.
I do.
Who you see in a different context, really.
There we go, guys. We're going to put that on the poster. Quite interesting, John Martin. Quite. Okay, Dad, see you next week. I love you.
Thank you, yes. Good night.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.